You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Cheer a superstar.
And that one's deep. Right center. Christian Yelich has tied it up.
You are Locked On Brewers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Ben Larson. Find me on Twitter at Cheesehead Talks. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/Locked On Brewers. Oh, and another Twitter handle that's at Locked On Brewers, the show handle as well. So check us out there. Hope you survived another weekend and early part of the week here and are doing well. Whether you're isolating or whether you've got a touch of the COVID or hopefully not worse, hopefully things are going well for you. And of course, we wish you all the best. And we'll all get through this. And hopefully this can help you a little bit, some memory lane look backs here with Locked On Brewers. We do have a little bit of news this morning from Major League Baseball as I record this. And that is that they're considering a plan that involves Arizona heavily, that involves everybody going to Arizona to play and start the season. They're talking about May, and I'm not buying it. I'm thinking if you do that, it's at least June. And if it's at least June, it's going to get hot. So hopefully all the games are at night or they find a shade apparatus because it's going to get crazy hot in Arizona. So I don't know how they're going to handle all that. Plus, there's about a million logistical things to deal with between now and then. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I hope it happens. I want to see baseball. I don't care if there are no fans there. I would normally, but I don't this year because of the circumstance we're in. So I want to see it happen because I want to watch the Brewers, right? I want to see them play every night. Don't want to see a season go to waste. Don't want to miss a season. Obviously, there are more important things, clearly, right? But if they deem it safe, then let's do it. But I don't think that's going to happen until at least June because a lot of other things have to get into place. So we'll discuss that. As some more details from this emerge later in the week, we'll do a podcast on what that would look like, what it would mean specifically for the Brewers, and a lot of it's still guesswork, but it's fun to talk about and kind of fascinating to watch play out here as they, you know, all the powers and all the pro sports decide what they're going to do. So we'll discuss that. But for today, we're going to look back on a simpler time, right? When all baseball is played outside, at least in Milwaukee, and they had old stadiums and payrolls were not nearly what they are today. And the Brewers had a couple of Hall of Famers playing for the team as opposed to now they just have one. So those were simpler times. 1987. Team streak. A great season. You know, probably the best non-playoff season in Brewer history, right? When you look at just what made up the season, the memorable moments, a no-hitter. The only no-hitter thrown in Brewers history by Juan Nieves. If you've been watching Brewers Classics, it's been on your TV screens this week. But besides that, the 13-game win streak to start the season, of course, highlighted by Easter Sunday's big comeback win over the Texas Rangers, the 12-game losing streak in May, the 39-game hit streak by Paul Molitor, just an incredible feat no matter what. And to think that he was still almost 20 behind Joe DiMaggio, it just makes Joe DiMaggio's streak that much more incredible when you think about it. Just hard to believe that he was able to do that back in the 1941 season because it was incredible. But Molitor goes to 39 and brings a ton of excitement, and the Brewers fall short of the playoffs. But it was a fun season for sure. So Dr. Scott is with us today. He'll join us next. We'll look back at some of the analytics behind that 1987 season and what made it so special. So we'll do that next. You're Locked On Brewers. Well, we live in a time where you definitely want to order in, you know what I'm saying? No matter what the product is, Postmates is there for you. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you're watching a replay of the game from whenever, maybe 1987. Sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. That's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what you want to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. Again, No time like the present. So for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for the first 7 days you use Postmates. To start free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmate app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. We need Dr. Scott here today, and he's with us to talk about Team Streak. Dr. Scott, of course, can be found at BrewMaths, Brew_Maths on Twitter, and BrewMaths.com. He's your Brewers sabermetrics genius, and since we might be able to soon break down the Arizona stats. I want to say Arizona Fall League, but nope, Arizona Summer League, which will be a really interesting experiment. talking about maybe playing all the baseball in Arizona, at least to start the season. It gets hot in Arizona. Don't know if they know that, but anyway. Dr. Scott is with us. Not to go off on a tangent, Dr. Scott, but...
tangents are all we have right now.
Get your desert sabermetrics ready, I guess is the point. But we'll get to that later. Let's talk about the 87 Brewers. It was a crazy year, and it's outside of any of the playoff years, right? It's the one probably most remembered by Brewer fans. They start the year on a 13-game winning streak. They soon after that lose 12 in a row. They do end up contending, falling short of the playoffs, but the other major streak in 1987 is Paul Molitor's 39-game hitting streak, which I was old enough to remember, but I wasn't a baseball fan yet. It had to be a huge thrill for fans who could live through that, because there aren't many hitting streaks that ever approach that amount of time, and you begin to get the eyes of the baseball world on you, as Paul Molitor did, and the Brewers won a game on a walk-off. Yeah, every at-bat. They won a game on a walk-off in game number 40 and ended up getting booed off the field because he was on deck. It was really quite something. So quite a year.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the whole year went. It was the year of extremes. You have the Nieves no-hitter, the Molitor hitting streak. You got the crew kind of winning 13 games at the beginning and everybody thinking, oh my God, Easter Sunday happened. And any Brewers fan who was alive or has anyone related to them that was alive during that time knows what that means. 1987 Easter Sunday. And some people get goosebumps if you just say that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of representative of how that whole year went. Just drama, drama, drama. And It didn't end up, going like the Brewers wanted to, but definitely an exciting year. And as a kid, I was 9 years old, 10 years old at that time, and it was right when baseball started to kind of get into my skin. You know, I'd been to games before, and so you can imagine that really stuck with me, you know, and it's probably a big reason why BrewMaths exists today, the 1987 Brewers. And so, going into some of those details that I mentioned before, you look at how the team went about their wins and losses. Everybody remembers the 13-game win streak, that started the year, but not everybody remembers that they lost 12 games in a row the month after. They went from 13-0 on April 20th to 22-21 on May 29th.
Ouch.
I mean, so yeah. that month and then some change sure crushed them. They lost like every game for a while there. They definitely had their ups and downs, and Molitor was a guy who kind of put them on their back. It was a year of individual accomplishments. And when they had these big surges, they had guys clicking on all cylinders. They had guys like Molitor with 39 game hit streaks and the no hitter kind of coming in. It was a magical year. Molitor, now you look at the 39 game hit streak, and just like you were saying, you can't imagine the pressure that starts to build once you get up past, I'd imagine 30 games is when everybody really starts looking at you. And so he was feeling that pressure for some time and responding to it. During the streak, he hit .415 with a .495 on base percentage and slugged .683. He was hitting leadoff most of the time, so he only had 7 home runs and 33 RBIs, but the guy was producing 1.178 OPS during that streak, and he stole 15 bases during that time. So, wow. He was just doing everything and on fire. He ended up leading the league in runs that year. And a lot of them came during those 39 games. During those 39 games, we talked about BABIP before, the batting average on balls in play. And during the streak, Molitor had a 452 BABIP. And that's relevant because people often confuse what that means. And his 452 BABIP, when you compare that to a 326 career mark, you can tell that he was hit out of his mind during that period. The career BABIP with a guy like Molitor, who has a huge sample size, is basically going to be his set point. So the 326 is kind of what you would expect him to do year in and year out. The 452 during that streak suggests that this is unsustainable. So he was just clicking.
Yeah.
And the more I read about it, the more I was worried that it might be cocaine.
Oh, well.
Molitor, I guess, had a problem with that in the 80s, and yeah. I kind of had forgotten about it. But the thing that started going through my brain was, were they testing him? And it seems like 1987 was far after any of that discussion, that kind of nefarious drug talk in the early 80s with the Brewers. And you guys can look that up on your own. I won't go into that because it ends up sounding negative. Yeah. But they basically had nipped that in the bud, the league did. And so these 1987 numbers, you can take them for what they're worth. They're real. Okay, now you look at Molitor and how he finished. 39-game hit streak, he's crushing it, he's stealing bases, and he still finished. I mean, he cooled way off, but finished this 1987 with a 353 batting average, 438 on-base percentage, and slugged 566. He only grounded into four double plays, led the league in runs with 114, and most people forget, I did anyway, that he stole 45 bases that year.
Yeah, incredible.
So all of that landed him fifth in MVP voting, and I couldn't believe that. I had to quick go look and see who finished above them, and George Bell won it that year. Alan Trammell was second, Kirby Puckett was third, and Dwight Evans was fourth. So those guys, some pretty big names above him, and they all had awesome years as well if you go back. So Molitor kind of put the Brewers on his back at the beginning, and once he cooled off, so did they.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Dr. Scott, I mean, I'm looking at the stats too, and the thing about Molitor is, especially during the 80s, and right up until his last year with the Brewers, and then his years at the Blue Jays and the Twins, he was appearing, I'm just guessing here, he was injury prone because he only played in 118 games that year. And maybe that's why he finished down the road in the MVP race. And so you see that through, of course, most of his career with the Brewers, the injuries. If he had stayed even relatively healthy, I mean, you're talking about an all-time great, he's already a Hall of Famer, but an all-time absolute great player. The guy was a phenomenal hitter, and he just couldn't stay on the field for the first, what, three quarters of his career? I mean, a long time, consistently.
So a lot. It was a revolving door kind of with him in playing time.
Yeah.
They even had to shift him around and tried getting inventive with him, giving him rest and time off, and nothing really kept him healthy.
Yeah.
That's the offensive part of things, kind of carrying the team. And then there's the other side of the coin. The pitching was pretty good too, but in the same way, you have these guys who kind of flip the switch and turn it on and have really good bursts, really good stretches of play. But when you look at the overall numbers at the end of the year, the pitching staff was pretty average. Higuera ended up 18-10. Wegman ended up 12-11. Nieves was 14-8. Bosio even came in, kind of took over a little bit at the end of the year. It was his second year, and Bosio was being utilized more and kind of getting a bigger role. He ended up 11-8. Chuck Krim kind of filled in some of the gaps too. And then the guy who really was the all-star, or the big name on the pitching staff outside of Higuera, was Plesac.
Yep.
Dan Plesac, the sack man.
People don't know now because they've seen a couple of his broadcasts where he might be annoying people. He was actually really good for the Brewers there in the 80s for a little while.
Yeah, he was great. And, a lockdown reliever that year. He had 23 saves, a 2.61 ERA, and he was striking out over 10 guys per nine innings. You combine that with a 1.084 whip, and, I mean, he had some pretty impressive numbers. He also, just on a side personal note here, he was the first guy to give me a baseball at a game. So I'll never forget him.
Well, of course you brought him up then. Come on.
Yeah, so this is all bias. So take everything I say with Dan Plesak with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because my childlike heart loves him. if you kind of look at the rest of this then, you know, you look at the team stats. How there are all these individual performances and kind of these ups and downs throughout the season. Well, the team, if you just gauge them based on OPS, the 1987 team, this is a telling stat, had a higher OPS with runners in scoring position than any other team in crew history. So they were very opportunistic. They ended up with an OPS with runners in scoring position in 87 of 838. The next closest was 1981's team had 828. And so, you know, that team knew how to turn it on when it mattered. They also were real good at hitting right-handed pitching and very good at home, which could have been coincidence or, you know, just anomaly. But one thing that was not was that they definitely knew how to win and how to do it in bursts. Their trouble was sustaining it. It was a young team and, you know, a bunch of guys trying to figure out where they fit. And it ended up being a fun year, but, you know, they finished third and went 91-71.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I'm looking at the stats now for the standings, I should say, for both leagues. But I'm pulling it up in the wrong spot, I think, because I wasn't seeing the amount of wins. The Brewers in the American League East finished in third place behind the Blue Jays and the Tigers.
Yep.
91 wins put them 7 games back, actually, which is, you know, pretty now. I'm trying to think in today's game. Well, you have to break up the divisions and they'd have to switch leagues. So I don't know if they would have made the playoffs in the American League. But, you know, you had the Twins, of course, eventually winning the World Series. And I believe they only had 87 or 88 wins. I'm not seeing the win total here in these standings. But they won the American League West over the Royals by just 2 games. And then they upset the Tigers in the League Championship Series. And the Silver Lion, of course, they beat the Cardinals in the World Series. But that Brewer team wins 91, and they only finish in third, and they're 7 back. So it tells you the Tigers had a really good team that year that obviously fell short in the playoffs, which does happen from time to time.
Right,
and, of
right.
course, there are only 2 divisions back then in each league. So yeah, it's just... you just never know what it's going to get you here. The Twins only win 80, upper 80s. I remember they didn't win 90 games that year. They only won high 80s, and they become the world champions. So if the Brewers had been in the West, they would have won the division. So
the last time that the Brewers whiffed first place that year was May 13th. So from that point, by the end of May, they were 5 games back. By the end of June, they were 9 games back. By the end of July, it was 10. And then they started to claw their way back and play slightly above 500. They had a pretty good August, but it wasn't enough, you know.
Yeah. 85 wins, by the way. 85 wins for the Twins. They stunk, and they won the World Series. What is that? Barely.
Kirby Puckett and Ken Herbeck. Talk about guys who knew how to turn it on.
Yeah, they used the you know, dumpy dome to win the World Series that year. And it was their first of 2 and 5 years, and I know that because I was I grew up only about 100 miles outside of the Twin Cities, and that's all I heard about. So, but yeah.
Well, the emphasizing too how crazy this year was. The Brewers had 7 walk-off wins and 9 walk-off losses. So
is that something?
10% of their games were, you know, down to the last hit.
Yeah.
So really a fun year. And I think anybody who has a reverence for that year or who looks back kind of on it, they all remember what I do. And I hate to project or talk for people, but when I think in 1987, I think of a sunny spring Miller, Milwaukee County Stadium. I almost called it Miller Park. You know, those red gates around the edges and the way that sun beat in on Easter Sunday, and the crowds were just, I mean, crazy. People were frothing at the mouth. You can feel it. Any Brewers fan listening to this, if you remember one thing I say today, please go back and watch some of the 1987 clips of the Brewers, because it was Bob Uecker was yelling in every single one of these clips. It's never a dull moment, and you can feel that magic real readily through these videos.
Well, they were still kind of fresh. You know, it was only 5 years removed from going to the World Series, and you know, that somewhere rather quickly that disappeared for a while in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it stunk because when I became more of a Brewer fan, it became around the 1990 time frame just due to my age and how long it took me to get into sports. And my favorite season still, probably of all time, just because of the sheer memories, and you mentioned Euchre, and I'll talk about this on a later podcast, was 92 when they won one more game. They won 90, or no, they won 90. No, I can't remember. I got to look. 92 and 70, or they were either 92 and 70 or 90 and 72. I got to look again. But they were contending right to the wire with the Blue Jays in the American League East, and a lot of great memories for me from that year. But the fans my memory of the fans that year was that there was a lot of apathy. And so somewhere between already 87 and 92, the whole small market, the whole we're tired of Bud Selig and they didn't like Sal Bando, and they knew that there was this push for a new stadium and they resented that, and obviously that turned very ugly before it got better.
That was the big thing, yeah.
Yeah. And so the 90s, a malaise, right? So we'll discuss that later, but 87, kind of a last hurrah. You know, even 92, as good as they were, fans, you know, you had Robin Yount's 3,000th hit, but it just didn't come to the ballpark until maybe the final weekend that year, and by then they were just a hair out of first place, and they couldn't catch the Blue Jays, who eventually won the World Series. So, anyway, a lot of tangents today. We're streaking ourselves, Dr. Scott, but that's memory lane's fun that way.
Yeah, hey, you got to tap into nostalgia when you don't have the actual thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, we'll catch up again. We'll pick another year. I don't even know what year, but we'll pick another year. Maybe 92.
Awesome. You can surprise me.
Yeah, right. I'll just spring it on you next week. So we'll catch up again next week. Thanks for the memories.
Thank you.
You know where to find him, Dr. Scott, at @brew_maths on Twitter and also at brewmaths.com. So check out his work there. Always good for some action tweets. He'll probably tweet some more about 1987. He does all this research. He's got to tweet it out. You know, he's got to share it. So check out his Twitter feed and enjoy a look back in memory lane, as it were. 1987. Times were simpler then, right? We didn't fear worldwide pandemics. We didn't even know about global warming. Well, we knew about it. We were just totally ignoring it. So, you know, times are different, obviously. And you might think they were simpler, but of course we also still had nuclear weapons pointed at each other, and, you know, we feared each other. So y'all have your own, you know, different eras of problems. All right, enough talk about that. You can always find the podcast at any major podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all the good stuff there. So check us out there with Lockdown Brewers, as well as any Lockdown podcast, including Lockdown MLB with Sully. You can check that out as well, as he continues to pump it out every day, even without baseball. We'll touch on that later in the week, though. What is the plan? What is all this Arizona talk? We'll talk about that coming up. And I'll also look back at 92, because I want to, because it's a heartwarming season for me. It's a nostalgic season for me as a kid, listening to the radio and the 1992 Brewers. So check us out there. I'm Ben Larson. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. We need to deliver your Brewers fix right here on Locked On Brewers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.